Okay, thank you. So as far as I understand, the idea of these quantum gravity days, it's also a venue for us to communicate ideas and maybe also unfinished projects. And so I take this opportunity to present some some ideas of mine and a project that I've been working on at times, which however is unfinished. And so there are many open ends, and some statements that I will make are probably vague, so there's a good chance for you to catch me off guard. And I hold this talk at the risk of you throwing eggs and tomatoes at me, but nevertheless, maybe that's gonna be interesting for some of you. So what I want to talk about is quantum theory and what characterizes quantum theory. So in gravitational physics, we're used to the fact that at least, so we have the equivalence principle, relativity principle, and they more or less single out, in some sense, general relativity from within the space of geometric or space-time theories. And the question is whether we could do something similar with quantum theory. So that we, for a moment, forget about Hilbert space structures and go to more general set of theories, probabilistic theories or information inference theories, if you want. And then we try to make some statements on such a larger set of theories and try to find which physical statements or postulates characterize quantum theory from within that space. And indeed, it is useful to do that. So, I mean, there already exists quite some work on this. For instance, one has been able to consider a whole set of probabilistic theories that have very different properties, physical properties from quantum theory in terms of correlation. They can have much stronger correlation than quantum theory or less, and so on. And these are not described by Hilbert spaces. And then, anyway, using such a framework of so-called generalized probabilistic theories, there's been a whole wave of reconstructions in the past, I would say, 15 years. So one finds basically physical statements that ultimately lead necessarily to Hilbert space structures, complex Hilbert spaces, and also the tensor product rule. So somewhat complementary to those probabilistic theories, there's been also new perspective on quantum theory emerging at about the same time, which takes the perspective of quantum theory as being some framework of information inference of some observer about a system, and speaks about how much information that observer can acquire about a system and so on. And within that perspective, quantum states, for instance, are viewed as as states of information that an observer can have about a system. So another question is, in this perspective, one gives primacy to concept of information and or limited information rather than probabilities. Another question is whether beyond interpretational niceness of such a perspective, whether one could also have some practical use of it. And similarly to the generalized probabilistic theories, use it to reconstruct quantum theory from a set of physical statements about information inference, let's say. And that's the setting in which this talk will be. I will not be able to give you complete reconstruction, but I give you some evidence that this is maybe not a completely hopeless program to pursue. So, and then the question is, of course, why would this be useful? Because after all, we have a working theory of quantum, quantum theory is of course very well understood, at least with its own framework. But in general, I mean, understanding quantum theory within inference theory space better, I think is a justification in its own right. That's also the main motivation here, but of course, many of us are also thinking about fundamental theories or quantum gravity. And then the question is also maybe can one use this understanding of quantum theory from within a larger theory space as, you know, using that information as justifying why or why not we should modify quantum theory, whether it is already a fundamental theory. And also maybe if the informational view on quantum theory, can we extrapolate that to quantum gravity? So this is the setup, the operational setup. So we will henceforth only talk about an observer O who's interrogating the system S. And all he's allowed to do is he can ask binary questions that are just labeled by QI now, some index set. And so binary questions only have yes and no answers, or one and zero. And whenever the observer acquires the answer to one such question, he will acquire one bit of information about the system. So we will work here within a context of limited information and also a context where it will be impossible for the observer to know the answers to all questions at the same time. And at that point, you can take a Bayesian viewpoint on statistics. It's quite natural for the observer to assign probabilities to the outcomes of these questions according to the information that he has about the system, from possibly having previously asked them questions to it, and also from the knowledge that he has about the whole set of states that the system can be in. I haven't really specified what these states are. I will do that in a minute. So and so, for instance, if the observer has absolutely no information about the outcome of a question, then you will just assign probability 1/2. If he knows the outcome, you will assign probability 1 or 0, and so on. So I'm at this stage not going to give you the precise relationship between information measures and probabilities, because ultimately that's what the what postulates for quantum theory should single out in the end. And indeed, you can actually derive a unique information measure. So at the moment, the relation between information and probability, I leave it open, but at the end I will mention what the relation is. So, and okay, since all the information that the observer can acquire about the system is done by asking binary questions, the set of probabilities that he can assign to the outcomes of the questions encodes all the information that he has about the system. And so the collection of these probabilities then represents his information about the system, and we will call that collection the state of the system relative to the observer. And of course, many probabilities will be dependent in the end, but for now, we don't worry about that. So then it's useful to distinguish for these binary questions different notions of them. They can be independent, and that's in the sense that if O does a single shot experiment, he doesn't know what the state of the system is, and he asks question QI, if it is such that that doesn't give him any information about what the answer to QJ is, then these two questions are independent. So that's a bit different from stochastic independence, because in the end, such questions that I consider here independent, they can be correlated in quantum theory by entanglement, for instance, but that would be a state-dependent notion. Then questions can be compatible if the observer is allowed to know the answers to both questions simultaneously. That is, if there exist states such that O can know the answer to both at the same time. And they are complementary if the information, if O has complete information about one, that it completely prohibits him to know what the answer to the other question is. So using the setup, we want to now see if we can get to quantum theory, at least for qubits. So at the moment, let's just forget about what quantum theory is and make some postulates. These postulates here are motivated by Carlo Rovelli's relational quantum mechanics and independent work by Bruckner and Zeilinger. But I've formulated these postulates a bit differently, but anyway. So let's see where they will get us. So the first postulate is what I call limited information. Colloquially speaking, what I require is that O can acquire maximally n independent bits of information about the system at any given time. So it means, in terms of these questions, that there exists at least one set of n mutually independent and compatible such questions. The next postulate is what I call complementarity, which asserts that there exist complementary questions. And that is that O can always get up to n new independent bits of information about S. And whenever he asks a new question, then there's no net loss of information. So by asking new question, that cannot lead to a decrease of his total information about the system. And so what I mean by this here essentially is that there exists at least a second set of such mutually compatible and independent questions, but however, which are complementary to the first set. So these two postulates, they don't give you a quantum theory in its full generality. So anyway, here I consider only qubit systems anyway. So N characterizes the system under consideration, but I will try to convince you that they do imply quite some elements of quantum theory. So the first question is, for instance, what is the number of degrees of freedom of such a system for N qubits? So that is, how many independent questions can O ask that system? That's of course related also to the tensor product, in quantum mechanics, that's related to the tensor product structure. So for n equals one, all we know is there's at least two complementary questions. So we know that, so I call D1 the number of independent questions for a single qubit. So we know there's at least two, but we don't know at this moment whether there could be possibly more. So for two qubits, so we consider them as composite systems. So certainly then all can ask individual questions about the two qubits. Each of these vertices corresponds to an individual question. And so there exists two D1 of them. So D1 is the number of independent ones for a qubit. So D1 should ultimately, of course, be three. But then O can also ask composite questions, such as Qij here, which essentially means are the answers to Qi and Qj prime the same? So, and I represent such in this graph here, the composite questions by such an edge. And he can build all kinds of such composite questions. And so these composite questions are independent of the individual questions, because if he only knows the answer to this question, then he won't know anything about the individual questions. So so now the question is whether these composite questions and whether they're independent and compatible. So and here I make an assumption, which is sometimes called the Speckers principle. It seems like a innocent assumption, but it's actually quite a strong assumption, but I will do it nevertheless. So the assumption is that if you have n binary questions and they are pairwise compatible, then they're also mutually compatible, so O could ask them all at the same time. So we'll make that assumption. So then you can argue that once you assume Speckers principle and this complementarity principle that I formulated before, then you can argue that the set of individual questions and these composites is pairwise independent. Then you can ask, okay, if they're independent, are these composite questions compatible or complementary? You can argue that whenever you have two composite questions that correspond to two edges that intersect in one vertex, then they are complementary, because if O knew both of these composite questions, he would know that these two questions are correlated. But these are complementary questions, so that is not allowed. Then you can ask whether composite questions that correspond to non-intersecting edges are compatible. And using, again, the Speckers principle plus complementarity, you can argue that they must be compatible, because if they were not compatible, then you can generate a situation where O, by asking new questions, experiences a net loss of information. So, and of course, you can also have such questions here that are compatible. So now that means, so we see that because correlation questions are compatible, it's very different from the classical case, because the two independent bits of information that the observer is allowed to know about the system, he can spend on correlation questions alone. So, and this is essentially what, for instance, Bruckner and Zeilinger define as entanglement for two qubits, that if you have more than one bit of information stored in the correlation questions, then okay, that's entanglement. For instance, if O knew that these two questions here, then there's no bit of information left to know anything about the individual questions, and then we consider that as an entangled state. Okay. So, but nevertheless, from this, we can still not argue what the number of degrees of freedom is, and that depends on D1. Anyway, how much time do we have left? Okay. But one can actually argue, give an upper bound on what these numbers of questions is. So it's related to the question of why is the Bloch sphere three-dimensional? It's something that many authors before have worried about. So here I want to look at it from a different perspective, maybe just the compatibility structure of these questions. So we know now that non-intersecting edges are pairwise independent and compatible, so O can ask them all at the same time and acquire the information at the same time, also assuming Speckers principle, but he's only allowed to know two independent bits of information about the system. And so it means whenever he asks any two of those questions, then they must determine what the other compatible questions are. And then you can ask, okay, what's the possibility for, so assuming, for instance, that the observer has asked Q11 and Q22 and he knows the answers to them, how could Q33 be determined from the knowledge of these? You can make a truth table because they're all compatible. And okay, they have to be pairwise independent. Then you can find that the only possibilities are the following here. So where A has to be different from B. So A is either 1 or 0. And this relation between them is then that Q33 is either given by the XOR negation of XOR of these two Q11 and Q22. or you can also call it logical biconditional. Okay, you can do that for all of these compatible sets of composite questions. And from this, you can conclude that there cannot be more than 3 because there's up to negation a unique way of determining the other question, given knowledge of any two of them. So we know now that D1 is either 2 or 3. And then you can start counting degrees of freedom. You get 15 if D is 3. Which is the right number for qubit quantum theory. And if D is 2, then you get 9, which is the right number for real bit quantum theory. So basically qubits living in real dimensional Hilbert spaces. Anyway, so then you can also ask, can you also get this the up to negation right? And in fact, you can. Using similar arguments, you can reconstruct the correlation structure of quantum theory of 2 qubits, which I represent, find convenient to represent in terms of these triangles. Whenever two questions are connected by an edge, then they are compatible, otherwise complementary. When they're in a triangle, then they're related either by anti-correlation or by correlation, which is called odd and even correlation. And one can convince oneself that this is exactly the structure that you also have in quantum theory. So for instance, if you have a qubit and they are correlated in x direction, 2 qubits, and they're also correlated in y direction, and they're necessarily correlated in z, anti-correlated in z direction, and that's also what you have in quantum theory. So you can also do this for rebits and discuss what the differences are between real and quantum, real and complex Hilbert spaces, but I don't have time to discuss this. When you go to 3 qubits, you can also argue why there's monogamy of entanglement. I guess I don't have much time to discuss this. But it's a similar argument. You can find that once you have spent 2 bits of, so what does monogamy mean? That once you have 2 qubits and they're maximally entangled or they're entangled, then these 2 qubits cannot be also correlated or maximally correlated with another qubit C, let's say. And you can here easily argue that if you spend your full information already on correlations between 2 qubits, then you have nothing left or no compatible question left. Correlation question left that also gives you correlation. I don't have time to discuss that with the other two correlated ones. Okay, so then one can also think about can one maybe fully reconstruct quantum theory from what we have? The quantum state is then of the system relative to the observer is then the collection of probabilities that he assigns to the set of independent questions. That represents this information about the system. It's the state relative of S relative to O because a different observer could have different information. And okay, anyway, so let me just flush you through some further postulates that give you more of quantum theory. It's a bit vague at this stage, the way I formulated here, and can make that a bit more precise. But anyway, I allow all states such that the information contained in that total information contained in that state is compatible with these limited information complementarity principles, then I require that the all total amount of information that he has about the system is preserved in between interrogations, and I require that the state evolves continuously under time evolution. And in fact, using this, you can determine what the information measure is. There's a unique one. Once you make some operational conditions on the measure, then you can argue that all this information about the question QI is just given by this quadratic relationship, and then the total information that O has about the system is just given by the quadratic norm of this vector here. And using this, you can, in fact, reconstruct reversible time evolution. I know. And you can reconstruct the Bloch sphere for a single qubit and some other results. So you can get the space of the correct state space, at least for 1 qubit. Okay, so these are conclusions, blah, blah, blah. I still have some speculation. Am I allowed to say that? Okay, so that's, of course, utter speculation now, but So if it is useful to, I mean, there's at least some evidence now that looking at quantum theory in terms of information is useful. Question is whether we could also think about when we do quantum gravity and we constantly meet the wave function of the universe, can we also interpret that as a state of information? Can we extrapolate that? And of course, we get the question relative to which observer is that a state of information? If you want to abandon the notion of an absolute observer, then the only way that I could see that this could be made compatible, now this is really speculation, is that we should rather view the universe basically as an information exchange network of some physical systems. And so in each of these systems can store and process information and basically in this way assign states to the rest of the network. It cannot assign a state to itself because of a self-reference problem. And in this way, we kind of avoid the notion of a global or absolute state of the universe. But of course, that's speculation. Okay, thank you.